Welcome to All About Business with me, James Reed, the podcast that covers everything about business, management, and leadership. What does it take to turn a family craft into a business that's loved by the UK's most prestigious family? And how do you keep that business going in the wake of social and economic change? Today's guest, Kiki McDonough, is a fifth-generation jeweler and has designed exquisite pieces for high-end customers, including Princess Diana, Queen Camilla, and Catherine, Princess of Wales. In this episode, we discuss Kiki's strategy for building a luxury brand, the key to attracting high-end customers, and how she's managed to remain relevant while also staying true to her style. Kiki, you started your own business 40 years ago in 1985 in jewellery. How did it begin?
Well, rather extraordinarily, in a very weird way, because I was a secretary for years, you know, emptying bins and making coffee for people and doing travel arrangements for people. And then I'd get bored after a year and move on to the next one. I mean, my CV was as long as the Bible, it really was. And then a friend of mine rang me up one day and said, who had an antique jewellery store in Bond Street, and said, would you like to come and design some modern jewellery? Because I'd like to sell modern jewellery. And I mean, I was astounded. I can't think of any other word, really. And I said, well, no, I think you've got the wrong person, you know, wrong number. Anyway, to cut a long story short, I agreed to do it after a couple of months of persuading. And we set up Kiki McDonough Limited. And I arrived on my first day with a blank piece of paper and a pencil, actually rather embarrassed, sitting there. Looking at this piece of paper, I thought, oh, Lord, what am I going to do? This is just embarrassing. And then I spotted in his counter a round crystal brooch with a diamond set bow in the middle and pearls around the outside. And I thought, well, if I cut a crystal into a heart shape and put a bow on top and make them as earrings and pendants and some diamonds and a few sprinkling of diamonds or whatever, and let's see what happens. So I asked this manufacturer from Birmingham to come down called David Deakin. And he arrived and looked at my ideas. And I have to say that he smiled, but not with any humour in it. I think he was just being polite. And he said, I'm really not sure. And I said, I don't know what made me say it, but I said, you know what, I'm not sure either. And we both burst out laughing. And he and I designed jewellery for the next 20 years. Those earrings are now in the V&A Modern Jewellery Collection. Absolutely extraordinary.
So you had this idea of cutting a crystal into half.
In a heart shape, yes. And it was the 80s, remember, 1985, when everyone was hearts and bows and big shoulder pads.
Right. But that's quite bold, isn't it?
Yes. I don't know quite where that came from. I thought, well, I'll just do this heart and this bow on top. But my great love are the coloured gemstones. I love all the peridots and citrines. And so... after those, I mean, the first pair I sold were £950. And when the person bought them, came to the store and bought them, I was apologetic. I mean, I was absolutely no good at all. I was so apologetic. I said, are you sure? Are you really sure? Because they are £950. And she said, honestly, she said, you're not a very good saleswoman. Anyway, and funnily enough, amazingly, she lives in America actually, and she heard that it was my 40th anniversary, probably from reading newsletters or something. And she still wears them.
That's fantastic. So you're still in touch with your first customer 40 years on.
Yes, still in touch. Yes, absolutely.
Well, that says a lot.
It's rather nice.
You said that you started your business, you called it Kiki McDonough, but then you were almost trading out of this antique jewellery shop. So it was a concession or something.
Yes, it was four shelves. I had four shelves. Really, I was trying to fill a gap really in the market between sort of £95 and £950, which is quite a lot back then. And a lot of my girlfriends, you know, if you had a fake this, you wanted the real thing, but they were never going to go to proper Bond Street shops because they were way too expensive. So I thought, oh, well, if I'm going to do it, let's fill that gap. So that's what I did. And it seemed that there was a market for it.
So how did you get the money to buy the diamonds and the jewels? Because they're not cheap, are they? I mean, in the first instance.
So it's funny, really, because my father was a jeweller, and I think I'm maybe fifth generation jeweller in my family.
But you have a history in the family.
Yes, I got a history of it, and not that I knew until, you know, I was asked to do this. And my father had an antique jewellery shop in Bond Street. And he retired quite early. And I was wearing Bieber boots and Bieber hats and everything. I wasn't going to take it over. Right. So I think
so. You didn't know you had a history of jewellery?
I knew I had a history of it in the family, but I certainly didn't know that it was within me at all.
But it was.
And it was. It appears that
that's
it was.
Interesting. But did you learn from him? I mean, is this something you would have picked up almost in
the ether? He was very easy around jewellery, which I think probably bounced onto me. I mean, he used to come back at the weekend sometimes, and I remember him coming back once with this, and he's wearing his jacket, his tweed jacket for the weekend, and he took out of his pocket this brooch, and he slid it down the dining room table like a cowboy does with a glass of lager, and say, "Kiki, what do you think of this?" And so I'd pick it up and I'd pretend, put it up here or a brooch or earrings, hold them up to my ear and said, "Oh, it's really special," and give it back to him. And that was all, really. I really appreciated what he did, but I certainly didn't think it was going to be my career in a million. Well, I mean, I think then the jewellery business, there weren't any women in it.
There weren't any women. That's interesting. So when you started, you were quite unusual.
Yes, all men in my father's.
Because there are a lot now, aren't there?
Oh, a lot. And which seems logical, because women are the ones who wear the jewellery. And it was certainly in 1985, it was peopled by men choosing jewellery for women to wear, which I always found rather odd, but, on we go.
On we go, as you say. So we changed, or you changed that by the way you went about it, it sounds.
I think I certainly changed the perception of fine jewellery for women to buy for themselves in this country. And I also, because I used the gemstones like amethyst, citrines and peridots, and then just did a sprinkling of diamonds, I think certainly I introduced colour and how easy it is to wear. I mean, in the beginning, people said, "Oh, I never wear green." And I go, "Well, no, everyone can wear green." There are very few colours that women, that everybody can't
wear. So you gave people the confidence to wear green.
Yes, I said, borrow them for 24 hours. And then they'd come back and say, "Oh, yeah, they're great. I didn't know."
Is that what you did? You let people walk out with them?
Occasionally, I think it was meant to be.
There's a lot of trust involved here both ways by the sound of things.
Yes, it was meant, and jewellery is very special. But it is also fun, and it is there to make you feel a little bit better than before you put it on.
Yes. Yeah, well, I would agree with that. I mean, so, Kiki, I'd be interested if you could describe, if that's possible, your style of jewellery or your approach, because I can see you're wearing some remarkable earrings, but people listening can't. What's your approach?
So, for me, it's about my life and my lifestyle, and I do what most people have done. When my children were younger, I used to take them to school, I watched them play football. I go to work, I go to the odd party or supper with friends. And I really wanted jewellery that you could wear that was accessible. Obviously, some of the jewellery you probably would only wear in the evenings, but jewellery should be worn, I think, not kept in a safe and dusted off every 2 months. It's there to be worn and enjoyed.
So it's for every day?
Yes. I mean, some of it's for every day. There is all the special editions, which probably people would wear more in the evening. But otherwise, it's my view is just get on and wear it.
Right.
Just get on and wear it. Don't worry about it. Just get on and wear it.
And you wear it to football matches?
Yes.
Is that right?
I think
you mentioned that earlier.
I'm a Liverpool supporter. So,
you have to wear red jewellery for those occasions.
So, I've been to Anfield, obviously, with my jewellery, wearing my jewellery. But I did go to the Liverpool and Manchester City semi-final of the FA Cup about 4 years ago. I can't even remember when it was, actually. Mm. And there was a woman 5 rows down from me wearing my jewellery. And I thought, I've really made it.
Right. Did you say hello to her?
I didn't because I wouldn't ever do that.
You
wouldn't do that, no. But I'd wait for her. I mean, she wouldn't know. She didn't know who I was. She'd obviously gone into the store and, But no, I wouldn't ever approach someone who was wearing my jewellery.
Was she wearing light blue or red?
She was wearing a red jumper, red cardigan. But the guy next to me was hilarious. He was wearing a sort of vest with lots of sort of gold chains Lots of jewellery, big gold Rolex and lots of chains around his neck. And when they first scored a goal, and I never forget, and I looked at him and I thought, oh, what's he going to think? And he put his hand up and he said, "High five, Granny."
High five, Granny. That's nice. We're both.
I thought, enough of that, young man. I thought it was so funny. It made my day.
So definitely jewellery for all occasions. Yeah. That's really good.
We're delighted that you're listening to this episode.
Hit the follow button so that we can continue to bring you the best business insight to help your business and or career. One of the things that you mentioned, you were one of the first women to make and design jewellery. How did that make you approach it differently, do you think?
You know, I think because I didn't really know what I was doing back then, I don't think I had an approach. I just thought, oh, well, those are really nice, and I love those peridot stones. Let's make some peridot earrings like this, or let's do this like this. I don't think for the first 3 years, I genuinely thought that for 2 or 3 years, people might buy the few things that I've done, and then that would be the end. I'd probably go back to being a secretary. I didn't have any ambition or any confidence, I think, actually, to think that this would turn into a worldwide brand. I really didn't.
So how did that happen? So you turned this into a worldwide brand.
Yes.
You didn't have confidence that you would do that at the beginning. But it happened. No, but you've done so much right for that to
I know,
happen.
I'm making it sound a little bit flippant, but it involved a huge amount of hard work.
Hard work is my
element. And my father said, the only thing he said to me when I started this business was, look after the pennies and the pounds will look after themselves. And I thought, well, that's really good advice. And I've kept very strict eye on the finances from day one. And I think that has helped. I think the fact that people do like the jewellery, obviously, is
when you say, I'm interested in this, because I feel the same way. When you say keeping a strict eye on the finances, what do you actually do? How does that manifest itself?
Well, I think for 40 years, every invoice has had to go past me and had to be justified.
So you sign every single bill?
Yeah, I approve them all. Yeah, definitely. And I do it now to this day. And, you know, the company hasn't needed the bank or shareholders or directors or anybody. I've done it all on my own, which in a way is sort of exhausting. But in another way, it's kept the company on a straight line and it's successful.
So you run a tight ship.
Exactly. I think that's the expression. I run a tight ship.
Yeah. You know. So you've developed a worldwide brand. In fine jewellery, I mean, some people call it a luxury brand. You're in the luxury space.
Yes.
And I'm interested in what this word luxury means, because there are a lot of businesses that do really well in the luxury space. Yes. What makes something luxury, and what does luxury mean to you?
I think luxury is a strange word. I don't really understand what it means, because everybody has a different idea of luxury. You know, if you haven't got very much money, then your idea of luxury is going to be different to somebody who has got a bit more money, or who's had a bonus, or it's so different. Everybody thinks about a different way. I mean, I think you would say that diamonds are luxury. But then there are lots of people who save up to buy a diamond ring and things, and it may not cost a huge amount of money. So I think luxury is about perception. And I think it's very difficult to say luxury is the following five things. You know, to me, a luxury would be a soft top Bentley or an Aston Martin or something, which is completely unattainable for me. But then someone else would think that maybe some of my jewellery is unattainable for them. And so I think it's a very strange word, and I think it, in a way, do I like it? Probably not.
You don't like it? So there's something about it that's sort of just out of reach, is that?
Yes, yes, I think that probably is right. But yet there's a lot of luxury that is in reach, as I say, depending on perception.
But we maybe aspire for things that are just out of reach.
Yes, yes.
I want that Bentley, or I like those earrings.
I think it is aspirational. Yeah. I think, you know, I've got women who would, you know, who can afford my jewellery, and then somebody else saves up for a particular pair of earrings they want. And so, yeah, I wonder if it's become a rather overused word, but maybe not.
Yeah, maybe. But you obviously know your customers. I mean, you know them personally, you know what they like, and they come back, and you've built a long-standing relationship with lots of them, it sounds like.
Yes.
Is that right? Is that how you approach business?
Yes, certainly for the first 20 years, I was, you know, milling around on the shop floor for at least 3 hours a day. Now the company has got bigger, and so I am still in the basement of my store overseeing what the clients are buying with my creative assistant, and, you know, thinking of the next collection and what we do, and, you know, is it wearable? I've got a drawer full of designs I've never used, because I thought to myself, oh, I'm just not sure, where's anyone going to wear that? Where, you know, how are they going to relate to that? And if I'm not 100% certain, it goes straight in the drawer.
Right.
I'm quite...
So you're always experimenting, but you don't necessarily proceed to production.
I think my jewellery, people say, you know, has it changed? And that, to me, means do you follow fashion, which I don't. I think it's evolved. It's evolved in the same style as my style and what I like. I don't pay a huge attention to fashion. I mean, you know, if everybody says, oh, God, well, purple coats are in, we must do lots of amethyst. I go, well, no, not really. You know, let's do some like we always do. But yes. I'm not going to change. I don't like changing the way my jewellery has evolved according to fashion.
Is the one line or product that's particularly popular or successful?
Well, our detachable earrings, which I did, right. Oh, goodness, that's 21 years ago. And I made a little diamond hoop with a drop and right. You can detach it. And I did it actually in 5 different gemstones, the drops, and they just took off because you can wear the, particularly a lot of working women or mothers, you know, can wear the hoops on their own.
Yes.
And then you can have the drops in your handbag if you're going to work and put the drops on in the evening if you're going straight out for a drink.
I'm very
so it's, you know, yeah. it's a movable feast. And they proved so popular that we now do, oh my goodness, 37 different types of drops with 7 different types of hoops. You know, it's evolved.
Right. So, but in 40 years in business, there's been a lot of evolution, I'm imagining.
Yes, there's been a lot of evolution in the coloured gemstones, certainly. Right. You know, when I first started, people said, oh, amethyst, oh, citrine, peridot, oh, no, green, you know, and all that went on. And it took me a long time to persuade the British public that actually coloured gemstones were beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And, you know, put them on and they light up your face. And yeah, it's just we all wear, I mean, women, so many women in winter wear black and black polo necks, black trousers or navy blue. And it's so nice to have some colour on your ears, which is nearest your face.
And that lights up your face.
I think it does. I think
so when someone walks in a room wearing your jewellery.
Yeah.
That's what you're hoping.
So what basically gets me out of bed in the morning is the fact that I might see someone walking down the street in my earrings, or I'm going I'm going to see football and somebody's wearing my jewelry, or I go to the theatre. I might go to the theatre or the cinema and someone is wearing my jewelry. And I think I have a great thing was I did that.
You get real satisfaction.
Yeah, I get real satisfaction from that. I just love seeing it worn.
So in the time you've been in business, Kiki, I mean, we've had the explosion of the internet.
Yes,
so
yes,
online
huge,
sales.
Huge.
So you were obviously selling in from a shop and now you've got an online website. What's your website address so people know if they can come look your...
So it's www.kiki.co.uk.
Yeah. So that's your... So what proportion of your sales are now online as opposed to...
About 2-3%. We do, yes, we do a lot of wholesale in Mappinoweb and Goldsmiths around the country, Fortnum and Masons, Lunds of Belfast. We're on Farfetch. And, you know, so there is quite a big wholesale side to the business now. But the internet changed everything.
So would they sell through their websites as well?
Yes.
I see. So you're being sold through multiple websites.
Yeah.
So how did that change the relationship with the, I mean, buying jewellery online is
a lot of
trust involved.
A lot of trust. But the pandemic was the thing that brought internet shopping forward 5 years, I think. Because if you were at home, I think we had a 3-month lockdown or 4-month and then there was another 5. If you wanted to buy your wife or partner or yourself something like birth, you could only go to a supermarket or a chemist. Yes. Which wasn't really very gripping, was it? So
no.
I think you really, people had no alternative. And I think we were particularly lucky because people were doing a lot of Zoom calls and that's, of course, waist upwards.
Right.
So, you know, they could say, look at my new earrings. And,
oh, I see.
You know,
oh, that's a good
so
thought.
I think that the pandemic changed ever internet shopping forever. But I think particularly men who were sceptical about buying fine jewellery online, and I completely see why. And I think that changed everything because they had to. If they wanted to buy their partner, girlfriend or whatever, a pair of earrings or some jewellery, they had to go online. You didn't have a choice.
Yes.
You couldn't go to a shop.
So you have customers, you know, Princess Diana, I think Duchess of York, Sarah Ferguson, and currently the current Princess of Wales, who you know, obviously like your products. How did that come about, and has that helped your brand? I mean, what's the relationship there?
So certainly when Sarah Ferguson and Prince Diana wore the jewellery, there was no internet and there was nothing. The only way you heard about the jewellery is if you saw it in the press or someone told you about it. And I think, so that was quite
hard. So did people know they were wearing your jewellery at that time? Or
well, they did, because the press knew what I was doing. Certainly after about 3 years of being in business, two or three years of me being in business, they knew what I was trying to do because I'd got them in and seen the jewellery and all the rest of it. And so, they were very good to me, actually. Very good to me. And they used to do, show the jewellery on
the pages.
So
would they come into your shop and buy things? Is that what happened? Or?
The thing about it was that they also knew what I was trying to do. Certainly the Duchess of York, all these years ago, my ex-husband knew her, David McDonough, and he, I think, had told her about it. I think she must have said, "How's Kiki?" or something. And he told her about it. And she said, "Oh, that's really great that she's doing that." So I think she had some earrings in the early days and necklaces and things. And then the Princess of Wales, I think it was word of mouth.
Yeah.
And then the present Princess of Wales, I think her mother spotted the jewellery and thought it's perfect jewellery for her because she could wear a pair of earrings and then still go out in the evening in them if she's ill. She's a working mother. And so, it's perfect. It's perfect. It's not bling and it's not cutting edge. I don't do either of those. And I think the royal jewels now are quite heavy. And so for state occasions, things like that, they're great, but I think not for everyday life.
So now in this sort of age of social media, I mean, that must be helpful to you.
No, I certainly think when the internet, started and there was Twitter and Facebook and all these social media, I don't think Instagram had started then, but somebody tweeted, which I didn't really know about Twitter. I think we were only just about to go on it. Someone tweeted that they'd seen the Princess of Wales wearing the jewellery. And so somebody rang me and said, "Oh, there's a tweet going around that the Princess of Wales is wearing your jewellery and this is Catherine." And so I just said, "Oh, how lovely. I hope they look nice," or something. And I didn't really think about it. And then we started getting orders from all over the world and it was extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary. It completely took my breath away. I had no idea that this was going to happen. I'm not very techie, as you could probably
So you were surprised by it.
I'm not very techie.
In the old days, it would
be
the phone ringing off the hook. They were all coming in online.
Yeah, and I'm not very techie, I'm afraid. So to me, this was a complete mystery. But luckily, I had some girls working for me who did understand what was going on.
So that's a new phenomenal.
Yes, I mean, I think it's helped businesses hugely, the internet and Instagram particularly, I think, which is there's always a favourite at the moment, and I think Instagram is probably the favourite at the moment.
So thinking about your career and 40 years in business, I'm interested, one of the things I'm interested in, if a young person is thinking, well, maybe I'll get into jewellery, what advice would you give them? How would you start a business in this space now if you were setting out as a young entrepreneur?
I think the most important thing is to say don't start big. you've borrowed £5,000 from the bank or £10,000, whatever. Then don't think, right, great, I've now got that money and I'm going to do this, 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 and this. No, stop. My advice would be stop right there and think seriously about who's going to buy your product, how they're going to buy it, what market are you aiming for? And do not charge into a website and then find that no one's buying from it because no one knows anything about you. So I would always say to someone, if you're going to spend that first initial small sum of money on making samples of your product, test it on your girlfriends, test it at have a party, with 50 people and say, "Can you tell me exactly what you think? These are the prices." It's a little bit of market research before you spend too much money, because before you know it, things are so expensive now, it's gone. The money's gone.
Right.
And you've got nothing to show
for it.
Well,
just buying the raw materials is so expensive.
Well, the money's gone because you've set up a website, you've done this, you've done that and everything, you're ready to go and you don't actually know who's going to buy your product. I think it's so important that to think
Because you do a little bit of mentoring, don't you?
I do some mentoring for the Prince's Trust, which is now the King's Trust. And so, yeah, I'm mentoring a girl at the moment who has actually got a jewellery business. And it's been very interesting because I'm a great one for looking forward, not back. I never really look back. And I have had to look back with her and see, you know, what... So the advice I give her can be based on, you know, what I've done. And it's been very interesting. She was...
Oh, you mean you've had to look back because you've...
I've had to look back at my own business and, you know, look back at my own career and see, you know, how and where, you know, things are going. She wanted to go straight into wholesale. I went, no, we're not going to go straight into
wholesale. Why did you go, no?
Well, because it just means wholesale is quite a big deal. You know, you're dealing with normally big companies and internet sites and everything. And it's a different ballgame. And I said, let's start by doing it small. And she's doing really well. She's incredibly enthusiastic. She works incredibly hard. She does have talent and luck, and she's upbeat. And you do need those things because, you know, there are times when you think, oh, you know, goodness, really? And you've got to have that sense of humour and that upbeat character to go, oh, never mind, just let's have a laugh and go on. You know, you really do. I think a sense of humour is probably the most important thing.
So, Kiki, if you're starting out as a new business, a new jewellery business, a young person building a business, and they want to move up into the sort of higher price points and build a brand that is maybe a premium brand, how would you advise them setting about doing that?
So, start small. Start with a collection, which you can call it. You can call it a name or whatever, some name or other. And then you have to make 10 pieces and you test drive it. You ask your friends around or whatever. And you don't price it to such an extent that you know that none of the people you're going to ask is going to possibly afford it. Once you've built a little bit of trust in your brand and people start liking what they're seeing and begin to buy it, then you can do a few more things that are a little bit more expensive. But I think if you think you're going to do that in the space of a year and a half, then you need to step back and just, you know, just go a little bit slower. Because I think you have to have that trust in your brand.
So when you say a collection, so you have a brand, your brand's Kiki McDonald, then you'd have a collection, maybe each year you'd do a collection? So you say 10 pieces. What typically?
Yes, if you're starting out,
what would it consist of?
Well, it depends what sort of jewellery designer you are, what sort of jewellery you like selling, but I think you should start with sort of 10 pieces that you think people who... your friends can afford, or you maybe ask your friends with their parents and they might buy them for their birthday or something like that. I think you shouldn't rush in and immediately design things, 10 things that cost £10,000. I mean, I do four collections a year, five. But I've been going for 40 years. So I know that the market is there for my brand. And I think you should just start off being careful.
So you start off carefully and small, but you use the word trust. It sounds to me that that's really important.
I think it's really important that people trust what you're doing, and they will do that slowly. You know, there is that expression, how do you build trust? And building trust, you don't instantly get someone's trust. You have to build it, and, you know, you have to work.
And that takes years in a business like yours.
Well, I think it can take, certainly, can take 2 or 3 years, I think, to build. People like what you do and then they buy one thing and then they might buy something from the next collection and then they are beginning to be on your side and understand what you're doing. You've also got to have a message. You can't just say, these are my 10 pieces. You go, I've done these 10 pieces because... And I think that's really important.
So what would be an example of the because?
Because... Well, in my case, it was I wanted to design fine jewellery for women to buy for themselves. You know, 40 years ago, they were earning more. They were beginning to earn more.
Yes.
And, you know, they had fake jewellery and wanted to buy real jewellery, but obviously couldn't afford the sort of serious Bond Street prices. So I think
you have stayed true to that.
I'd like to think I'd stay true to that. I mean, we still sell things from £1,000 to, well, upwards of that. There's a lot. I mean, the detachable earrings I was talking about earlier.
Now, we've talked to people on the podcast before about purpose. I mean, that's your because, isn't it? In a way, we're doing this because it's the same in a sense.
Yeah, I think you have to be able to tell people why you're doing this. You know, you can't say, oh, I thought I'd do 10 pieces of jewellery and here they are. And people go, oh, really? Oh, okay. And then instead you're going to say to them, I decided to design some jewellery. I really want this jewellery to be based around what my friends wear or whatever. And you build a story around it.
So you said, Kiki, that, you know, it's important for designers to think about the because and why they're doing something and what the collection's about. Mm. You know, I understand that, you know, ballet is quite an important part of your sort of creative sort of source material.
It is really a source of my material. I love the ballet. I get inspired by it. I've been going since I was 4 years old. And I, when I was a secretary and earning not very much, I'd put a bit aside every week to go buy a ticket to go to the ballet. And I'm passionate about it. And Lauren Cuthbertson, who's one of the principal dancers of the Royal Ballet, is the face of Kiki McDonough in for this 40th anniversary, which I'm thrilled about. She's lovely. She's the most beautiful ballet dancer. But years ago, I went to see Sleeping Beauty. It was just when I'd opened my first store, actually. And there was a spring fairy in Sleeping Beauty that was wearing a tutu with pale blue and green satin on top. And I remember looking at it and thinking, that's such a beautiful colour combination. And so I got back to the store and I said, girls, we're going to make jewellery, which is multicoloured, and we're going to do peridot and blue topaz. We're going to do garnet in citrine, because that was the autumn fairy. Mm. And I can't remember what the other two were, but anyway, so those, and they all went, oh gosh, that's quite, are you sure, Kiki? There was a lot of, are you sure? And I said, yep, we're definitely going to do it. And we did it, and that was almost one of the starting points of multicoloured gemstone jewellery in the UK. At that
so
time,
that was inspired by
that. That was inspired by costumes. A tutu in Sleeping Beauty. And it is, those earrings I did in 1989, and they're still one of our best-selling earrings all these years later.
Fantastic. So it's good to seek inspiration in all sorts of places. Yes, that's what I'm hearing here. You know, you go to the ballet and you get an idea to take back to your business.
I can see a shape as well. I look around and I see a pretty shape and I think, oh, that's pretty. I mean, I've actually, you know, you can see a road sign and you can think, that's such a pretty shape. I like the curves around it, or whatever, you know, and you go back and you think about that and you incorporate it. And
so you're always working, aren't you?
I'm always, yes, honestly.
You see a road sign, you go to the ballet you're getting ideas.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of crossover here.
I think you do. I think somebody once said to me that the business is in my DNA. And I suppose, I said, no, it's not. Of course, it's not in my DNA. But actually, I think it probably is.
What about building a brand? I mean, if you're building, I mean, your brand, Kiki McDonough, I mean, she's starting a new business. How do you get a brand established?
Well, I established my brand over a long period, remember? I mean, I've taken 40 years to do it. I had children quite late, so I wanted to spend a bit of time with them when they were younger, certainly in their first sort of 8 years. So people would say to me, you know, how many shops have you got? And I'd say one shop, two children. Mm. And I was quite careful in those sort of 8 years to do 50-50. So the business didn't really progress a huge amount in those 8 years. I mean, it continued on an upbeat note, but it's probably slowed down a little bit. But then when they went off to school and things, I laid the charge. And then the internet, of course, helped. And then I was able to spend more time thinking about, you know, where we go next and what we do and what we sell and who to and all those questions.
But I mean, a jewellery brand's normally the name of the jeweller, is that?
I know.
is that the way to go with this?
Well, I don't think it necessarily has to be your name. I think... it's sometimes helpful not for it not to be your name. And it depends what you're selling, obviously. But I mean, it just so happened back in 1985, it was called Kiki McDonough and that's where it stayed. Yeah. But I'm really happy that my brand now is a proper, international brand, because if I disappeared off tomorrow, which I'm not doing, it has got longevity and it's got legs.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, that's clearly, that's a big investment over time.
It is, actually. But it's been a hell of a ride. I can't tell you, I literally would not change anything. If someone said, okay, you can have your career all over again, I'd say, please, can I have it exactly the same? I don't regret any of it. And of course, there have been ups
really
and downs.
That's really good to hear. But when you said there have been hard moments. And
well, two recessions I've done, a pandemic, and at the moment we have stagnation. And then we've and now we've got Trump's, you know.
Yeah, is that going to affect you, the trade tariff?
Not, I mean,
stagnation is what you call it at the moment. Well, yeah, it feels like that.
Well, I think it was stagnation before Trump, actually. I think it's very hard. I think what is hard for the entrepreneurs at the moment, who only set up their business a year ago, the doom and gloom that was spread before the election and after the election. I mean, it was really damaging, I think. I think a lot of people did go into a doom and gloom. And entrepreneurs don't need doom and gloom. They need upbeat, they need positive messages, they need the Treasury to be on their side. And I think it was really unkind to spread that doom and gloom. And it's very difficult to spread joy after you've done that. And I think it's...
Yeah, it's hard to go back.
It was very unkind to do that, because I think that you know, a lot of people have suffered from that.
Yeah. So we need more joy in the business environment.
We need some more upbeat. We need, you know, we're there for you. We know what you're going through. We know what entrepreneurs, there are thousands and millions of entrepreneurs in this country, and we need the government behind us. We need them to say, we know what you're trying to do. We know what you want to sell your product. You want to employ people. You want to move on. You want to do that. And there is nothing coming from them. And in some ways...
That's how you see it. Because they say they're pro-growth and they want to grow the economy. And
well, I think probably
not seeing so.
The pro-growth thing was interesting. How did that work out? I'm not quite sure.
Well, it's not happening at the moment.
Not happening at the moment. But, entrepreneurs need positive attitudes.
Yes. But you've managed to stay positive, it seems.
Well, I think I've just got a good sense of humour, actually. I think that's the thing that's taking me through.
I mean, as you said, over a 40-year period, you're going to go through periods that are, some periods are going to be better than others.
Yes. And I think
it's
first,
important to keep that perspective, isn't it? Even if it's a tough period.
Yes. And you will come out of it. And actually, if you can start a business in a recession and you make it through the recession, then you're on the road.
Exactly. It's a good time in many ways.
So in some ways, it's a good time to start a business, because you can do all sorts of things and, you know, you can tread lightly to begin with.
But keep it small, keep it tight.
Keep it small, keep it tight. You know, look at
the finances.
Yeah, watch the finances every time.
That would be your advice. Mm. I'm interested with your design vision. So you said you don't follow fashion.
I don't follow fashion.
No, but you have a sort of vision of your... How do you stay true to your vision while at the same time being sort of sensitive to customer desires? Because I suppose fashion might drive your customers to ask for certain things.
Yes, and actually I feed a lot off my customers, and they might say, could you do more jewellery for evening, or could you do more jewellery for this or more jewellery? So yes, feedback from your clients is really important. But I think as far as my vision goes is... every year I think, I'm never going to be able to think of another collection ever again. And then out it comes, back it comes. And I think my vision is just to keep designing pretty jewellery with beautiful stones and making women happier, because they've bought something with their money that they're going to treasure.
So that's what some business people call your North Star, I suppose. Yes. You're sort of always going for
that. Yes, that honestly is my North Star. That is, it's a good word, actually, North Star.
Well, I quite like it. It's good to have a sort of clear purpose.
But I think it's important to also to stay true to yourself. I mean, I think somebody mentioned to me a while ago, you should be doing shoes and things like that. And I'm going, not really.
Well, some people branch out like that.
Some people branch out.
But you're not going to.
But I know, because there's so much more jewellery I want to design and want to people wear. And so I think I'll probably stick to jewellery, I think.
Yeah.
For the moment.
And this sort of thing about being pulled in different directions by fashion. I mean, your customers are, we're all in the same world, seeing the same things.
Yes.
Wanting things.
But also it's interesting, the first pair of earrings I did was the crystal hearts with the bows. And we've just made them again, actually, 40 years later, because I'm doing a big archive exhibition at the Saatchi Gallery on the 4th of June. And they arrived from the manufacturers, these earrings. And we're 40 years later, and the girls who work for me in their 20s all picked them up and went, oh, my goodness, they're so pretty. And I'm thinking, that's so funny. It's all just come round again. It all just goes round and round.
Oh, you think they're back in fashion, so to speak?
I'm not sure if they're back in fashion.
Or people just like them.
They're just, yeah, this is what I love about my jewellery, because some women's daughters are wearing, you know, they've borrowed their mother's earrings. And so it tells me that there is a market going down because it's not high fashion.
So tell me more about this exhibition at the Sartre Gallery. It sounds fabulous.
Somebody said about a year and a half ago, I think you should have a book about your 40 years in business and doing this. And I went, no, we don't need a book. Oh, yes, no, we really need a book, Kiki. And so it took a bit of persuading. And so there is a book. It's Kiki McDonough, A Life in Colour, that comes out at the beginning of June. Oh. And it's going to be launched on the 4th of June.
And is there going to be a jewellery display as well?
Yes.
And is that going to be there for a little bit if people want to go?
No, just on the.
So you have to. So we'll make sure this is made available to people before the 4th of June.
After the 4th of June, it's then going to come to the store. It's only there for a day, and it's going to come to the store, and it's going to be there for. All right, so 12 Simon Street, it's going to be there. So come anytime, and the book will be there as well.
Fantastic. Kiki McDonough, A Life in Colour.
Exactly.
That's your book. Exactly. And there's lots of pictures of your jewellery over there.
Lots of pictures of the jewellery. Obviously, a little bit of explanation about me and my way of thinking. And then there's a glossary in the middle about all the stones I've used and a bit about all the stones. And then a bit for all the collections over time. And my tiara. I designed a tiara during the pandemic because I thought, I don't know if anybody, but we use it. It's borrowed by brides when they get married. And I've always wanted to design a tiara. And during the pandemic, I thought, you know what? If no one ever looks at it, I'm going to still design a tiara. So I did.
So this is available for weddings.
For weddings, for brides. Nice. Yeah. It was the only two modern tiaras that was in the Sotheby's tiara exhibition a year or so ago. Yeah, I was very, very
one
proud.
One of two modern ones.
Modern ones. I was very proud of that, actually.
Fantastic. Mm. So this anniversary is a big deal.
Yeah, it is a big deal, I think. I mean, I'm a great, as I say,
you
know,
like to look
40
forward.
Years, Kiki. Oh, yeah. let's go on. And they go, no, stop, Kiki, stop for a second. 40 years is a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot of years. It's something to celebrate.
Again, the book has made me look back over my career. And it was so nice, in a way, looking through this book as it was being produced and thinking, oh, golly, yeah, I remember that. And all the books, all the PR books that I've ever had, which I've kept all the press cuttings, obviously, because it's reference publishing. So I was going back through those and I go, oh my goodness, and look at that.
So it's got a lot of interesting...
Mostly hairstyles, actually, because they have changed.
There'll be lots of interesting things to look at. So you talk about the stones, the gems. Yeah. Where do you source them from and how do you go about doing that?
Well, I used to travel everywhere to get the stones. And
you go in person?
Yes, but now...
When you say everywhere, where do you mean?
Well, I've been mostly to the fairs, the jewellery fairs, because all the stone dealers from everywhere go to the fairs. I used to go to the Basel Jewellery Fair every year, but that stopped. But to be honest, when the Basel Jewellery Fair stopped, I'd been in business long enough that I actually know the four stone cutters and stone dealer that I like. And I have stuck with them really for 30 years now. I've used the same people because I trust them.
Are they in the UK or outside?
They're outside the UK and I trust them and I know them and they... Yeah. And they now say to me, they know so much what I like. They will write and say, oh, send me a picture of, say, I've got this green tourmalines and I've got this. And what do you think? And I'd go back and say, yes, send them over. They send them over.
So where are they, if I might ask? Which country?
They're in Europe.
Right.
Yeah, they're in Europe.
So is that, so this is a global, I mean, obviously the sourcing of the gems is a global.
Yes, absolutely. So they get the rough and cut them but then they also...
I mean, there has been some controversy about diamonds being mined in places.
Yes,
so
the lab grown.
How do you manage to ensure that you...
Well, I don't really sell diamonds like big solitaires and big diamond necklaces because my thing is colour.
Right.
So it doesn't really so much apply to us. I think for those people in the diamond industry, I think it's very difficult because the lab-grown diamonds are extraordinary. They really
are. That's what I've heard.
Yeah, absolutely extraordinary. But then... Is it making diamonds more accessible? I mean, if they're sold as lab-grown diamonds, then I think it's fine because it's making them more
accessible.
Is
the difficulty telling which is which then?
Yeah, luckily, I don't have that problem.
That's not a problem
that.
For you because you're not doing
to do that.
That, yeah. But you have some diamonds, don't you? You use some diamonds.
Yeah,
you
I sprinkle them.
Yeah.
I still just sprinkle. I mean, the ring I'm wearing at the moment is Far Opal and Perigeux, and it's got 6 little diamonds in it.
Right. But
they're small. They just add a little bit of, well, sparkle, I suppose, a bit of light.
Yes. So you say you look forward. Mm. What's next for Kiki McDonough? Yeah.
So, well, I think actually for the first time in my life, I'm thinking to myself, let's just get through this year. And so this year, and then we do sell a lot. Our second biggest market is America. So obviously that's going to be next. Mm. And we have had jewellery in America, and then for various reasons we took it out, and now we're going to work.
So when you say your second biggest market, do you have concessions in stores?
No, second biggest market online.
You do it all
online.
So people are ordering online.
Yeah, so I think the US is next. Exciting, actually.
Yeah, well, it's a huge market.
It's a huge market.
So how are you going to? So
very competitive.
This is an interesting business challenge for a lot of people who want to from the UK want to sort of set up. How are you thinking about doing that?
Well, I think I'm going to start small. I'd like to get it into a few independent shops first, stores first.
Which parts of the US would you go to?
Well, it's so difficult, isn't it? Because you see, online, if you look at the various places in America that we get our online sales from, I mean, it's everywhere. I mean, we've had orders from Idaho to Seattle to San Francisco, to New York, to Charleston. It's very hard to pinpoint someone, but I probably would.
So what
like
are you going
to
do? Get AI to sort of interrogate the data and tell you which places are likely to have more
customers,
probably or do it yourselves, or how are you going to do that?
I think probably we would start somewhere in or around or just outside New York, I think, probably to begin with. And that would be my first port of call, I think. And then
that's interesting you say or around New York. Would
yes,
you go
or like Greenwich, maybe Greenwich, Connecticut, or somewhere like that. That's where I'd really like to be because I think that would suit the market. And then we see where we go from there. Again,
so you'd start with a physical shop or a concession.
Not my shop, but what I'd like to do is
work from a shop.
Put the jewelry into a couple of independents, say in and around New York, or whatever, and then test the market to see what they like, because we do quite a lot of collections, so we need to test the market, see what people are liking.
You'd have to have a sort of clone of yourself there talking to the customers, wouldn't you? How are you going to do that?
Well,
or someone who knows about what you're about, how do you create that?
Give them the book.
That's good that you've got the book. Yeah,
give them the book.
So, but you need to train the people.
Yes,
sort of
there's all that
that's
involved. You have to go out. Someone would have to go out and train the people and the brand and things. And I think it would also independents are very good at their client base. They would look at the pieces, say, that I gave them or they decided to take, and they would have those clients in mind. Mm. I mean, if they had a client list of 1,000 people, they might say, well, at least 300 people might like that. So it's a lot of work and research. But
would you do a launch event?
I haven't got there yet. Can I get through this year first? Assuming we get through 40 years.
No, but it seems to me, I'm just listening to you, that you're in a way replicating what you did here.
Exactly.
40 years ago, in a way, there by starting in another store, having a few shelves, doing it sort of
softly.
I mean, soft launch.
I think going to America big can be a terrible mistake, and you can lose a lot of money. So, I don't intend after 40 years to do that.
No. Well, I wish you every success with that.
Thank you.
So, I think that brings me to the end of what I wanted to ask you about your business. But I have two questions I always ask at the end,
right,
Kiki, and I'm going to ask them of you. The first one is, and it's a clue here in the post, is what gets you up on a Monday morning?
Well, it is always this thing of, who's bought what over the weekend, and what we might sell this week, and what people are buying, and the chance of walking down the street and seeing someone wearing my jewellery. That's what gets me up on Monday.
I love the fact you get such pleasure from seeing people wearing your jewellery.
I think that's so
nice.
After 40 years, it still has not lost its shine for me. And I look and I did that.
Yeah, that's so positive. And then the last question is, where do you see yourself in 5 years' time? This is from my interview book.
Where do I see myself in 5 years' time? Still involved in the brand. without question. And depending on how it grows, is I suspect it'll need. I've got a managing director who's fantastic in Sian Daly. She's great, and so yeah, probably maybe a few more stuff. I don't. It's very difficult question to ask someone when you're in the sort of economic turmoil that we're in at the moment, because you just don't know. In the previous recessions, you knew pretty much when it was going to end and where it was going. And you knew that a year and a half would be about right. But this time I have no idea. It's very difficult. So I am pretending we're in a recession. So being ultra careful. So yeah, but in 5 years' time, I'll definitely be here.
And hopefully in America as well. We'll set up there. That would
hopefully
be
on a beach, actually.
Okay. Well, yeah, West Coast.
West Coast.
Very yes, good. Exactly. Well, thank you for coming and talking to me. Well,
thank you for having me here.
Kiki, it's been a real pleasure. Very interesting to learn so much about your business. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kiki, for joining me on All About Business. I'm your host, James Reed, Chairman and CEO of Reed, a family-run recruitment and philanthropy company. If you'd like to find out more about Reed and Kiki McDonough, all links are in the show notes. See you next time.